Dip, 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 dip. Sha-la-la-la, sha-la-la-la, puddle. Sha-la-la-la, sha-la-la-la, puddle. Sha-la-la-la, sha-la-la-la, puddle. Sha-la-la-la, sha-la-la-la, puddle. Dip, 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 dip. Good evening. This is the Labor Exchange, and I'm Dennis Kreese, a member of the Boulder Area Labor Council, AFL-CIO. The subject of tonight's program will be Women's History Month, Women Labor and Political Leaders. With us is a very special guest to address this subject, and that is Sarah Gallardi, union member, Service Employees International Union, SEIU, Local Union 105, and a former state representative at the Colorado State Legislature. Sarah, thank you for coming all the way up here to KGNU. And being on Labor Exchange. Really appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me.
Sarah, let's get into some background, like what I like to do with all my guests. And so how long have you been a union member with SEIU Local Union 105?
36 years.
And what kind of work did you perform in your employment? And with that said, could you discuss that and all the challenges involved?
I was a nurse at Kaiser Permanente, and that's how I became a union member for SEIU. And I worked at many different facilities. I was, as a union member, and was part of our contract that once you're in a job for 6 months, if you choose to, you can bid out to another job. I'm a licensed practical nurse, so I was able to do that. And after looking at my history a few years ago when I bid on a different job, I realized I stayed in a department, for about 7 or 8 years.
Sarah, what kind of level of education preceded this profession? And did you work while going to school?
Yes, I went to college for a year. We did not have summers off or any vacations of any kind. It was a solid year. And yes, I did work when I was going to nursing school. I was a nurse's aide at a nursing home in our small town. I grew up in Northwest Iowa.
All right, then. Moving on, Sarah, could you discuss union leadership positions that you have held with SEIU Local Union 105 and any other labor organizations here in the state of Colorado?
Sure. With SEIU, I first started off, I was a CAT, which is a communications action team member. And so my job was to help the union stewards. So if there were any flyers or meetings or education or bargaining information that needed to be distributed, the steward would bring that to us as their CATs, and we would help distribute that. We also did voter registration drives and other work for the union. And after I was a CAT for a few years, I decided to step up, and they asked me to run as a union steward in SEIU Local 105. We run for that office, and I was elected to that office and was a union steward probably for at least 30 years.
It's a long time.
It is. And I was also a team leader in many events. I was also a member political organizer. I was president of our COPE committee. Our COPE committee is the Committee on Political Education. And that, over time, that really became a lot of fun to me. I really enjoyed educating our members about politics and not necessarily the politician, but about politics and how it affects our lives every single day.
Sarah, are you satisfied with the number of women in union leadership positions? And if not, what needs to be done to change this paradigm?
No, not at all. There are a lot of great union leaders out there that are women, but we still need to step up to the plate, continue to work on that. And one way to do that is certainly to educate our fellow union members, to get them more involved, to inspire them by having them come to events and see what they're interested in, and also to see what they would like to do, whether they want to take a small piece of the pie or they want to take a large piece and what they'd like to work on.
All right, then, Sarah, very good with the background. So let's move into the content of the show with the first part, Women Labor Union Leaders. So, Sarah, could you educate, inform this KGNU listening audience, especially our new and younger listening members, of the progress with women labor union leaders on the national, state, and local levels within the labor movement?
Yes, I think we have a lot of great women who are leaders in this country, and especially for the labor movement. For example, my international president, Mary Kay Henry, she was elected in 2010 and has been an incredible leader for our union in terms of organizing, getting more people involved. And also another great leader is Cindy Estrada. She's vice president of the United Auto Workers. Karen Nussbaum is an executive director for Working America. Rachel Bryan, community liaison for IBEW. And these women stand up for us every day and make a difference in their leadership roles.
And I have a few down here. Liz Schuler, the secretary treasurer of the AFL-CIO, number two person there. And Lisa Bolton, who we both know, is now vice president in Washington, D.C. for CWA. And she's a former guest on this show, not once, a couple times. And then another guest... And it was kind of a historic thing with Josette Jaramillo, president of Colorado AFL-CIO. And lest we forget, the president of the largest union united in the state of Colorado, UFCW local union number 7, and that's Kim Cordova.
Absolutely. Some impressive women.
Yes. So how does, you know, again, you've been a union member 34 years. How does this compare with the labor movement from, say, 20 to 30 years ago?
Well, it's very different, but not different enough. And I say that by that we still need to continue to work on having women be more involved and moving into leadership positions. 20 to 30 years ago, it was definitely what we call a man's world, and women had to step up to the plate and show that they belonged in leadership roles. And one of the ways that they did that was by being part of the staff, by becoming president of their local unions and helping to organize and stepping up to the plate and making a difference.
Very good. Sarah, how do popularly elected, appointed women, labor leaders, greatly assist the level of union density throughout the United States and the state of Colorado?
Well, I think they have a big impact and affect our labor unions just by being women and going out and talking to women in the workplace and to men and talking to them and educating them about what a difference they can make and how important a role it is for them to be in a labor union, how it empowers them, makes their world different, and makes it better, and how they can get more involved.
You know, more specifically, Sarah, how does the, and you've been part of this, how does this impact organizing with a majority woman workforce that's unorganized?
Well, it's impactful by, I think that when a woman goes to a fellow union member and talks to them and says, hey, here's what we're going to do. We're going to get organized. We're going to have a meeting. And would you talk to your fellow workers and see if they can come? And also another way we can impact them is making sure that we're working, either doing these meetings before work or at lunch, to make sure that it doesn't have an impact on their families at home, and also getting them much more involved and showing them that women can step up to the plate and get involved and have a voice.
Is a subset for the, you know, what I said in terms of the content of the show, Women Labor Union Leaders. I want to get into this is the subset, critical issues for women labor leaders, and we've talked about it. So let's begin with this one, gender equity pay gap. Could you discuss this issue and how it has had a negative historical impact on all women workers in the private and public sector?
Absolutely. One of the biggest impacts, says it in the title of what the issue is, equal pay for gender. White women in the United States and in other countries around the world make 80 cents less on the dollar than men do. We even have, as you know, Dennis, a celebratory day throughout the year of when women match up with men and are starting to get the same pay. And Latino women, Black women, and Native American women all are paid even less than white women on the dollar. There are over 144 countries around the world that also suffer from pay equity. And the good news about that is that they're all starting to step up to the plate and say, hey, we recognize this is an issue, and if we're doing the same job that a man is doing, then we have a right to have that same pay and to have that same type of recognition.
That's a good segue for this question. How has public policy and or legislation addressed this issue?
Well, in many of the other countries that I was mentioning, and in the United States and in Colorado, we've been working on trying to address the equal pay gap for a long time. I myself, as a former legislator, was fortunate to run an equal pay joint resolution the 4 years that I was in the State House from 2006 to 2010. And right now we have Senate Bill 85, which is being run by Senator Jesse Danielson, who's a very good friend of labor, and she's very familiar with this issue. And so she's addressing that, and it's out of committee and going to the Senate floor.
When we talk about all the categories of women, you know, from a racial and ethnic standpoint, what are the advantages for all these women or all women working under a union collective bargaining agreement?
Life-changing. Because when you have a union collective bargaining agreement, this is set into your contract. And so when you look at a job description, for example, the job description, it doesn't have anything to do with gender. It has to do with the job. And so whatever your job is, you and your male counterparts will be paid the same for it. And also, another great thing about our collective bargaining contracts, as you know, Dennis, is that in the back of our union contracts, it shows how much we're paid. So management can't use it as an intimidation tactic to say, well, Sarah, you're going to get paid this much, but this person that sits right next to you is going to get paid that much, and don't ever talk to that person, because that's very intimidating and it divides the workers. And so with a union contract, that it helps us so much so we don't have pay gaps.
All right, then let's move into this next critical issue for women labor leaders, and it's workplace discrimination and harassment. So again, could you explain, detail this issue and its impact on all women workers?
It has a powerful impact, unfortunately, on many women workers in Colorado and all across the United States, as well as in other countries. And the reason it has an impact is that women, it's a way for management or your employer or your boss, whatever title they have, to intimidate you and to make it so that you won't step up, that you won't feel like you, not only do you feel like you don't have a voice, but you don't even feel like you can have an impact or have a say in what's going on. And discrimination comes in many phases. It comes in phases of if you're a single mom with children, or if you're a mom who is involved in her community and needs to have specific hours to work out, that's discrimination. And another piece that would be harassment would be if the boss is a male, for example, and is not watching out for you the way he does your fellow employees who are men, and also many other issues that come right along with discrimination. And certainly we both know that there's a lot of discrimination out there for women of color especially.
You know, I know there's a lot of egregious examples. We don't need to really get into detail with that, but they're there. But what needs to be done on the national, state, and local levels to effectively address, eliminate this issue?
I think one of the best things we can do is education. Through education, talking to women in the workplace and in communities and cities all across the country, we'll be able to educate them so that they understand what is harassment, what is discrimination, and what are some of the solutions that you can come to. Well, a big solution that we could work on is legislation. And we can work on legislation at a local level, like cities, municipalities, also on a state level, and also on a national level to make sure that discrimination and harassment doesn't keep continuing to happen. And one of the biggest reasons that we as women can stand up and help each other is to have that voice and to talk about it.
All right, then, Sarah, I'll get right back to you. This has been the Labor Exchange. I'm Dennis Kreese, a member of the Bold Area Labor Council, AFL-CIO. The subject of tonight's program is Women's History Month, Women Labor and Political Leaders, and with us a special guest, Sarah Gilardi, union member, Service Employees International, Union Local 105, and a former state representative of the Colorado State Legislature. Sarah, just one last question on these critical issues. Single working mothers paid family leave. Could you give an update on this critical issue and how important it is for the single working mother workforce?
It's incredibly important. And as you know, Dennis, over the last 5 years, in particular in the state of Colorado, we have been working on, as a state legislature, trying to get family leave. Now, family leave on the state level is different than family medical leave that was passed at the national level. Family leave on a state level would be created and set up so that it is for single moms who have are going back to school or being more involved in their communities, and so they would need to be have leave. But it's also for people who have family members that get ill, or if they have a child. Or one of the biggest issues that we run into, as you know, Dennis, is if you need to care for a sick child. And that's very impactful. And the family leave bill over the last few years has maybe gotten out of this, passed out of the House, passed out of the Senate, then it goes back to the other chamber and it gets killed. But this year could be different. And one of the many reasons it could be different is because we now have a Democratic House, a Democratic Senate, and a Democratic governor. But also another reason is that after last year when the bill didn't pass, then groups of people together and got together, including myself, and met with all the stakeholders that are involved in family leave and the moms, 9-to-5, labor unions, businesses, all kinds of different groups. And we're working hard to address issues, how to make it better and make it work so we can pass legislation.
That's a good segue, Sarah, because as a former state representative, what are some of the obstacles presented to like you and other state representatives that prevents passage of this important legislation?
Well, one of the biggest roadblocks we have is money. Another roadblock we have is lobbyists. Another roadblock would be the business sector. But also one that I paid the most attention to, which was when I was elected to office in 2006, my job was to represent the people of my district, and that's what I did. And so sometimes when an issue, maybe you support it and feel like it's the right thing to pass, you also need to listen and hear from your constituents to make sure that that's what they believe in and that that's what they want done.
Yeah, let me summarize with this again with the same question. Again, how do many union collective bargaining agreements address this issue?
Many union collective bargaining agreements are able to address this issue through their contracts. And through their contracts, we are so fortunate that we are able to have paid sick time, paid vacation time, paid education time, lots of different, and if you unfortunately have are injured or have a short-term disability, we have that in our union contracts. So that makes an incredible difference, especially to, again, if you're a single mom and you have a child. You get a call at 2 o'clock in the afternoon and they say, you got to come pick your child up because he's sick or she's sick. So you go pick you. So you leave work and let's say you aren't going to get paid. You go home, pick up your child, can't get into the doctor. It's the afternoon. So then you get your child to the doctor the next day. Well, you got to take another day off. And if your child has strep or chicken pox or anything that needs a few days away from school or daycare, then you've lost a lot of time at work.
All right, then, great, Sarah. So let's move into the second part of the show. Just a few questions there. Women, labor, political leaders. So, Sarah, you've already mentioned it, but again, let's, for the listening audience, repeat this. When were you elected as state representative for the Colorado Legislature?
In 2006.
And you, what was it, House District 26 or something?
House District 27. It was
27.
Arvada.
What kind of bills, legislation, did you initiate on behalf of all workers and their families?
Well, you know, my first response to that question would be all of them.
Okay.
Because we know, right, Dennis, that everything impacts labor members. Everything impacts all of us, from your schools to your roads to your buildings to firefighters to everything that health care, everything we're involved in. But some of the bills I feel like that I passed that really support working families, I passed a bill in 2010 for the SNAP program, which is the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, to help people. Even if you're in a union job, sometimes you need that extra boost. If you're a single mom or a single dad, you need that support to get a little extra food. And so the SNAP program, we worked on that for a long time. And it was a bipartisan support. Governor Ritter signed that into law, and it really helped a lot of folks. I also worked on legislation for labeling off-use cancer drugs. And what that means is that if you have a medication for an oncology patient, for example, and it works for one type of cancer, and they do research and study and find out it'll help another type of cancer, then patients should have access to that. And that would affect all kinds of folks. We also, as I said earlier in the show, the 4 years that I had the opportunity to be a legislator, we passed the joint resolution for equal pay. We also passed legislation, teacher loan forgiveness program. We also passed a lot of legislation for workers to make sure that they were able to be safe on the job.
Okay. Sarah, you know, this is great. I remember when you got elected, and I thought that was a historic event myself. And then, you know, the fact that you had two terms there is real good. So, but, you know, with that said, how important is it for union women workers to pursue public office? And what kind of long-term positive impact can their election greatly assist women workers and subsequently all workers and their families like what you did?
That's a great question. And the impact that they would have is incredible. And whether it's a municipal race or city council or a county seat or state legislature in the House or the Senate or the United States government, women have an incredible impact, especially union members, because we come from the grassroots level. We as union members understand how hard, what it's like to struggle, what it's like to make ends meet, what it's like to represent our fellow co-workers and to work to have a voice on the job. And so if you have a voice on the job and you move that up to an elected office, then that's also going to have an incredible impact on all the people that are watching you do that. And so they want to become a part of that and they want to get more involved. And then they are going to make a huge difference as well.
Sarah, that's good. You know, this morning we talked and, you know, you tried to find us and I tried to find us before I even, you know, formatted a question about information or data with the number of union women workers holding public office here in the state of Colorado. That's a big lift. And then also I was thinking with all union workers. But we know that we have union members historically and presently in the Colorado legislature, city councils, school boards, etc. But this is the follow-up question I had to that, is that why is it also important to seek appointments on boards, commissions, and so on and so forth for union women workers?
Well, because that's a great place for them to start, right in their community. If you're on a board or a planning commission or any kind of a board in your own community, or even decide to learn about firefighters and what happens when they go out on a call, or 911 dispatchers, all those different boards and commissions will help you understand your community and all the people who really don't have a face, or that a lot of times we don't even really know what they do to support our community. And so that's local. And so on a local level, if you understand that, then you can move up into other levels.
And it also, it'll help you understand and you'll get your voice.
Absolutely.
In other words, you will be speaking to particular issues on that commission or board, and it'll be a test to see how people respond to you.
Absolutely. And you'll also know what you're talking about. You'll be very well educated.
Yes. So anyway, Sarah, we've got about 5 minutes left. And so I'm going to get into a summary. So I'll begin with this. Both of us are union, are dues-paying members to the Colorado Alliance for Retired Americans, a primarily union retirees senior organization. You and Mona Moffitt are lobbyists for the Colorado Alliance for Retired Americans at the state capitol. Could you give an update with that work and how much of it benefits union retired women workers, all workers and their families, and of course, retired senior Americans?
Absolutely. That's such a great question. And this was a new adventure for me starting last year. I was asked by the Colorado Alliance for Retired Americans to be a volunteer lobbyist. And so Mona and I started working on that. And as you know, there's three or four other folks and sometimes a few more that are involved in this lobbying group. And so what we do is we meet every Friday at the state capitol. And what our job is to watch for bills that will affect seniors, retirees, and fellow union members. We're also associated within a constituency group with the AFL-CIO, so we meet with them on Friday afternoons also to learn about what's important to labor, working families, what's going to affect collective bargaining, all those other issues. And so then once we have a good understanding of what's going on, then what we do is we will sometimes testify before committee, or we will send out a message to a lot of folks to say, will you please call your legislator regarding a specific issue? Or can you send a note? Can you send a letter? We attend hearings and committee meetings, and we also send this information out to our members. And as you know, Dennis, we have over 29,000 members who are involved in the Alliance for Retired Americans just here in Colorado. So that's a big group.
And, you know, you kind of set me back at the last meeting in that. And, you know, it was a matter of fact, because there's a lot of bills that are introduced at the state legislature by state reps and state senate. But you told me, and, you know, you told all of us that there was, like, just on education one category, healthcare another category, that there were 50 different versions in each category. And I was going, my goodness, you know, there's a lot of people not singing off the same page.
Absolutely. And that's our job, is to help them try to sing on the same page.
Yeah. So, you're still doing that, and I'm just super impressed with that. And I think for us, it's a great advantage, the Colorado Alliance for Retired Americans, to have you as one of the lobbyists, because you are a former state rep. And Mona Moffitt is just she's got a motor. You know, she just works and works and works, and she does great work.
So, thank Sarah, you. And yeah, she is wonderful.
Sarah, we're doing really great. You've covered everything, so. My last question is, and you can take, you know, we have a couple minutes. Do you have any final thoughts or comments for this KGNU listening audience in the context of tonight's subject, Women's History Month, Women, Labor, and Political Leaders?
Well, thank you so much, Dennis. It's been really an honor to be here today. And yes, I do. I think one of the biggest messages I'd love for people to hear is, especially for women, is that you can be involved, and you can take a step every day to make a difference in your life, your family's life, your community life, and also step up to the plate and help. And if you're fortunate enough to be in a labor union, then get more involved. Go to meetings, attend, learn them, the contract, learn how to be educated by your union and how to get involved and make a difference. And I also wanted to leave, if I could, Dennis, with a couple of quotes from some awesome union members, too.
Go ahead.
So a great union leader who I had the chance and opportunity to meet a couple of times, once through the AFL-CIO and through the Denver Area Labor Federation, and then also through my own union, SEIU Local 105, Dolores Huerta. And one of her great quotes I felt like is, organized labor is the only way to have fair distribution of wealth. And then I think another one that's really appropriate in the times that are going on today is by Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, Supreme Court Justice and co-founder of the Women's Rights Project of the ACLU. Solidarity is what we want. We do not want to find fault with each other, but to solidify our forces and say to each other, we must be together, our masters are joined together, and we must do the same thing.
All right, then. Thank you, Sarah. For those of you who join us even later, the subject of tonight's show was Women's History Month, Women, Labor, and Political Leaders. And with us is a special guest, Sarah Gartolardi, union member, service employees, SEIU, Local Union 105, and former state representative of Colorado State Legislature. Sarah, thank you for being on Labor Exchange at KGNU. And if anybody has any comments about this show or any other show on KGNU, please call 303-447-9911. And next week, Monday, March 11, 2019, please listen to La Lucha Sigue at 6 p.m. This has been a Labor Exchange, and I'm Dennis Kreese for KGNU Community Radio.